The Web That Has No Rebar, Understanding Chinese Medicine, page 159. Way of Life, Bune Wei Yin. This category of precipitating factors is traditionally called not external, not internal. In other words, it includes those factors that are neither pernicious influence, which is external, nor emotions, which is internal. To the West, these are usually considerations of lifestyle, and so they have been categorized as such. This category also includes inherited constitutions and disposition. A discussion of lifestyle and medicine poses a special problem. Lifestyle is not the province of medicine alone, but it's also the concern of the culture as whole and all its members. What is considered harmonious, valuable, and correct in medicine may be an examined cultural belief that has been incorporated into the medical system. Sometimes it is simple to distinguish a deeply held cultural prejudice and a principle that is more exclusively a medical issue. For example, the great physicians of the Far East usually believed rice to be the central grain for human life. Obviously, this recommendation would be seen as too parochial for Westerners. Or a more extreme example would be the notion accepted by the authors of the Neijing that honoring an emperor is a positive value with health benefits. Clearly, this is a societal norm that has adopted a medical guise. Lifestyle, much more than any other medical consideration, can easily carry the imprint of such unexamined cultural biases. This caveat notwithstanding, lifestyle must necessarily be a major clinical consideration for the East Asian physician, whether practicing in the East or West. How a person lives is a critical piece of the landscape. But the physician's perception, judgment, or recommendation must be carefully considered and must be in the context of a patient's own unique culture, history, and individual options. In cross-cultural medicine, the practitioner must avoid his or her cultural preconceptions. This is especially true because physicians have enormous and disproportional power and must avoid imposing their own personal judgment. Lifestyle, like dampness or anger, must be seen in a two-pronged manner. On one hand, the discussion may be about cause, but on the other hand, the discussion is very much a description of behavior, a sign of activity that needs to be integrated into a perception of a pattern. Diet is considered an important influence on health and illness in Chinese medicine, and many books are devoted to dietary considerations. Because the stomach receives food and the spleen is responsible for transforming it into qi and blood, these two organs are most affected by diet. Irregularity in quantity or quality of food, or in times of eating, can disrupt bodily harmony. Insufficient food or lack of proper food can mean that insufficient raw material reaches the spleen. There will then be deficient qi and blood in the whole body or in certain organs. Excess food that obstructs the stomach's ripening and the spleen's transforming is called stagnant food and may lead to such symptoms as distension, sore belching, or diarrhea. A predilection for certain types of food can also generate disharmony. The Chinese say that too much raw food can strain the yang aspect of the spleen and generate internal cold dampness, resulting in such signs as abdominal pain, diarrhea, or weakness. Fatty and greasy food, alcohol, or sweets can produce dampness and heat. Improperly cleaned food may injure digestion. Different tastes resonate with different organs. The Chinese people know many types of food, combinations of foods, and methods of preparation that are sometimes prescribed in medical literature and practice. This book is not primarily concerned with therapeutics, so Chinese dietary suggestions are not discussed. Diet, more than most other therapies, is strongly tied to a society's particular customs and habits. The physician needs to be culturally sensitive, as most Chinese dietary concepts are not easily transferable to Western culture. No Chinese book could tell Westerners what to eat for breakfast. Westerners would probably not be able to find their ingredients or prepare them, nor would many of them want to eat the results. And the Chinese could never give a reasoned opinion based on empirical experience on precisely when to eat or not to eat lasagna. Sexual activity. Sexuality and sexual activity are powerful factors in health and illness. Sexuality is deeply personal, steeped in pervasive cultural norms, and often influenced by power and class position. Social constraints and moral judgment can be hidden as medical or natural facts. Separating what is medical from what is more arbitrary imposition of society can be difficult, if not impossible. Like any society, China's relationship to sexuality has been complex. Attitudes toward various forms of sexual behavior, such as same-sex relationship, sexual versus reproductive relationships, autoeroticism, masturbation, transsexualism, fetishism, and the essential question of how to balance duty and pleasure varied tremendously and differently influenced medical texts. The discussion of what is proper sexuality often merges with what is healthy sexuality. Medical knowledge often masks social constraints and culturally contrived norms. The bottom line, however, is that the East Asian physician recognized sexuality as a basic and fundamental force in the human landscape. Chinese medicine considered that, to the extent that sexuality has intimate relationship to reproduction, its roots lie in the kidney's essence. Sexual dysfunction can be a sign of kidney disharmony as well as lead to kidney disharmony. The dynamic of sexuality and reproduction depends on healthy essence and the balance of the kidney's fire and water. Disharmonious sexuality, diminished or exaggerated libido, painful or uncomfortable sexual intercourse, inability to have sexual relations, premature ejaculation, inability to reach sexual climax, can lead to disharmony or be a symptom of kidney essence disharmony. But sexuality, and especially in its relationship to sensuality, is modulated by all the organs. For example, the spleen allows sexuality to be nurturing, the liver allows it to be assertive, and the heart allows it to be affectionate and warm. Spleen disharmony can be associated with inappropriate obligation and loyalty. Liver sexuality can be overly or insufficiently aggressive, and heart sexuality can be recognized by an overindulgence in seduction or constantly feeling disconnected. Physical activity. The category of physical activity includes general life activity. All life activity, to the Chinese, should point towards the goal of living in harmonious balance with the seasons and one's own constitution and stage of life. Young times, morning, spring, youth, should be active periods in a person's life. In times, evening, winter, old age, should be quiescent period. The Neijing, for instance, mentions that in the winter, one should go to sleep early but arise late, and remain dormant, like someone with private intentions, or as if one's intentions were already fulfilled. Physical activity is important to harmonize the flow of qi and blood and to develop strength in the body. Excessive labor, however, can strain the spleen's ability to produce qi and blood, leading to deficiencies of these fundamental textures. The body must rest, but excessive ease or slothfulness can weaken the vitality of qi and blood. Excessive use of particular part of the body, a barber's hand, for instance, or singer's voice, can lead to strain and disharmony. In some cases, the physician will suggest a change of lifestyle, but often this is impossible. In the case of a singer, for instance, the physician would prescribe treatments so that continual use of the voice would not throw the body out of balance. The physician would create a balance within the given constraints of a person's unique options. An inappropriate lifestyle can be both a generative factor of disharmony and a manifestation of disharmony itself. Inappropriate lifestyle accompanies disharmony. There is no beginning or end. A person who is always running around may drain the qi of the various organs, or conversely, may be manifesting hyperactivity of those organs. Someone who is always sitting around can cause the qi and blood to stagnate or may be manifesting depressed activity of the organs. Chinese medical practitioners are always concerned with the maintenance of health. The Neijing poetically says, to administer medicine after an illness begins is like digging a well after becoming thirsty or casting weapons after a battle has been engaged. Patients are often taught correct diet, proper attitude, and healthful lifestyles. The central concern is always balance, rhythm, and harmony. Food, for instance, should be prepared and eaten in balance. Leafy green vegetable, a yin substance, should be cooked with ginger, which is yang. Tai Chi exercise encourages rhythmic and controlled movement. Adolescents are expected to have different emotional attitudes than the elderly. Frail people should do less demanding work than people with robust constitutions. Recommendations of this type are not made only by doctors. The determination of what is or what is not a healthful lifestyle is made by the society at large and becomes part of a cultural model of how to live. The theory and practice of health are thus also the concern of philosophers, educators, cooks, homemakers, parents, grandparents, neighbors, and friends. Obviously, physicians must always be careful not to abuse their position of power and cultural authority with their parents, patients. Miscellaneous factors. The Chinese also recognize several other precipitating factors in illness, which strongly belonged in the not external, not internal category. These include burns, bites, parasites, and trauma, sudden, easily identifiable conditions, and proximal causes of disease. Although these factors can be readily thought of as causes, the Chinese physician must nevertheless consider how they interact with other bodily signs and symptoms, and must discern a pattern to reharmonize. Even a snake bite or a burn cannot be isolated from the rest of the person's being. The miscellaneous factors are extensively dealt with in the therapeutic literature, but are not essential to the understanding of the Chinese medical view. All of the precipitating factors discussed in this chapter would be called causes in the West. But it must be stressed again that in Chinese medicine, a distinct and separable cause is unimportant. The relationships within a pattern are crucial. Any one factor is, finally, another piece of the whole. And a complete patient is treated never for the cause, but for his or her unique configuration of signs and symptoms. The idea of causality in Chinese medicine is ultimately a means for identifying and qualifying the important important relationships between environment, emotional character, personal lifestyle, and health and illness.